Back at the White House, of course, there is an atmosphere of gloom and great solemnity. We'd like to check in there now. We switch you to Sid Davis at the White House.
I think you can call it an empty feeling, but that's what one feels standing here, knowing that the body of President Kennedy is no longer in the house that he, while living, fought so hard to win. And I, watching Mrs. Kennedy come out with the children, it's very hard for one to describe. It's almost an interference of one's personal life to try to describe the emotions of that family, particularly the children. Little John on her right and Caroline on her left, dressed in aqua, I believe you would call it aqua, outfits, little coats, and their red Mary Janes. I think you could call the shoes the red Mary Janes, little straps over them. And little John a bit impatient and bewildered and not understanding what this all means, resting one foot behind the other, sort of putting his left toe behind his right heel while his mother held his hand until the casket was placed on the caisson. It's hard to ask yourself or what a child might feel when a child is told that his father is dead. Caroline has reached the age where she has some understanding of this loss. She will be 6 years old on Wednesday, and John Jr. will be 3 tomorrow. 2 birthdays coming up this week. 3 years ago, I can remember when Mr. Kennedy was the president-elect, and he had come home for Thanksgiving, come home to Washington, be with his wife because she could not travel at that time. She was about to have her baby. He had left Thanksgiving, I believe it was Thanksgiving afternoon, and was flying back to Palm Beach on a DC-6, a chartered flight. He flew back, as a matter of fact, on the press plane because the weather was not so good. There was a 4-engine plane, and the Kennedy family plane was only 2 engines. And he got the news on Thanksgiving evening, flying back to Palm Beach to continue the work for the new administration, that he got the news by radio that his wife was in the hospital and had given birth. And the pilot of that plane, I know his name, and I know him well, his name is Bill Kramer, he's with American Airlines, brought the president up front into the cocpit of the airplane, the president-elect at the time. And the president talked to the doctors at Georgetown University Hospital and learned the condition of his wife and learned the condition of the baby. And the plane raced back to Washington instead of going on to Florida. And that was one of the happy occasions in this family's history. But overall, with many accomplishments, they have not had what you might call the luck of the Irish. Joseph P. Kennedy has lost 2 sons and a daughter to violent deaths. And today's events are tragic as well to the whole nation. The president's office is now empty of all of his filing cabinets and material. The only furniture remaining is the large mahogany desk that Mrs. Kennedy had found in the basement here that was made from some ship timber some 100 years ago. That remains in the Oval Office. And the large circular red rug with a presidential seal embossed in its center is all that remains. The office is empty. The pictures are down from the walls. The rocking chair has been taken out. The president's little ship models and the gifts from other state heads of state have all been removed. The office is being prepared for President Johnson. And at a time like this, it seems almost barbaric, perhaps cruel, to talk or to have to do these things. But the government must go on. And Mrs. Kennedy realizes this. The grounds of the White House have now almost cleared completely. People have trickled away from the White House. Some still stand and watch. Sky is blue. The sun is shining. There's a breeze here. And the body of President Kennedy will come back once more tomorrow on its way to funeral services. This is Sid Davis speaking from the White House.
The procession bearing the president's body has now reached the plaza of the Capitol building, and the caisson, the procession has stopped. The caisson bearing the casket is stopped, and there will be ceremonies here, the ruffles and flourishes, a 21-gun salute, and the playing of Hail to the Chief. One can't look at this scene without remembering that it was in this very plaza in January of 1961 that John F. Kennedy was inaugurated as the 35th President of the United States. It was a very cold day. It had snowed during the night. Here is Hail to the Chief. Procession is at the plaza of the Capitol. You just heard the playing of Hail to the Chief, the song that is the traditional song of the President of the United States. As I was saying earlier, I was recalling the inauguration of John F. Kennedy on this very spot in January of 1961. And you'll probably recall it was at that time that he made what is considered the most memorable statement of his administration, when he said, "My fellow Americans, ask not what your country will do for you, ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for this freedom of man." Eight military pallbearers are now bearing, or the military guard is, are bearing the president's casket up the steps into the Capitol. They are now mounting the steps of the Capitol building, moving slowly, one step at a time. The casket is draped in the American flag. The casket has been carried to the top of the steps of the Capitol building. It is now approaching, walking across the little veranda of the Capitol, approaching the entrance, going in through the large brass doors. We're now going to switch you to our broadcast location inside the rotunda of the Capitol. We take you now to the Capitol Rotunda and Art Schreiber.
Here in the rotunda, there are hundreds of people stand silently, solemnly, as the clergyman just a few minutes ago arrived, were the first to enter the rotunda of the official cortege. Now the color guard has just walked in. Military men stand at attention as now the casket itself enters the rotunda, being borne by the military guard. They carry it slowly. Behind is the presidential flag. They're in the center of the rotunda, walking now to the catafalque, which is cloaked in drape, black drape. They are now bearing the casket all the way around the circular rim, which has been roped off with the red velvet ropes. And the guard is carrying the casket in a half circle around. Now they are up on the catafalque and placing the casket, which is draped with the American flag, on the catafalque. They stand there for a moment. Now they come to attention and move down. Four on each side, representatives of the five services of the armed services. And
the Kennedy family has repeatedly requested that no flowers be sent in tribute to the late president, that donations to charity be made instead. But today, here, there will be placed by the late president's casket two wreaths, one of red and white carnations and small blue baby's breath, with a card that says on it simply, "The President." That wreath is from President Johnson. The other wreath is one of large white pom-poms. The card on it says simply, "The House of Representatives."
At the just to the west of the casket, at the within the circle of the rotunda, but now placed the American flag and the presidential flag. This group now is standing silently, waiting for the family to enter into the rotunda.
During these official ceremonies, Speaker McCormick, Senate Majority Leader Mansfield, and President Lyndon Johnson are expected to make a few remarks in tribute to their late leader.
And now the military guard, which was part of the cortege, has entered the rotunda and turned to the right and come towards us in the northwest quadrant. They will take their place down below to the west section. There was the company of the U.S. Navy enlisted men, the Special Honor Guard, which was composed of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Commandant of the Marine Corps and the Coast Guard, the National Colors, and the clergy. It is now completely filled here in the rotunda. It's very difficult for anyone to move. And Mrs. Kennedy now has entered the rotunda and is standing at the east quadrant, right inside the doorway as you enter the rotunda from the east entrance. She is flanked by military guards. It is silent. The only noise that you hear in the rotunda is a quiet shuffling and the whir of movie cameras and the click and the flash of still cameras. The bearers of the casket are now moving away from the casket towards the east quadrant. The casket on the catafalque remains alone. Only the color guard stands to the west of the head of the bier. It is draped with the red, white, and blue of the American flag. Mrs. Kennedy has pulled back the veil from her forehead. She is dressed in black, the veil sweeping down back of her head and to the sides. She just moved it away from her forehead.
With the surge of a light, far from spent. And, in a moment, it was no more. And so, she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands. There was a father with a little boy and a little girl, and the joy of each in the other, and, in a moment, it was no more. And so, she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands. There was a husband who asked much and gave much. And out of the giving and the asking, wove with a woman what could not be broken in life. And in a moment, it was no more. So, she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands and kissed him and closed the lid of the coffin. A piece of each of us died at that moment. Yet in death, he gave of himself to us. He gave us of a good heart from which the laughter came. He gave us of a profound wit, from which a great leadership emerged. He gave us of a kindness and a strength, fused into the human courage to seek peace without fear. He gave us of his love that we, too, in turn, might give. He gave that we might give of ourselves, that we might give to one another until there would be no room, no room at all for the bigotry, the hatred, the prejudice, and the arrogance which converged in that moment of horror to strike him down. In leaving us these gifts, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, President of the United States, leaves with us. Will we take them, Mr. President? Will we have now the sense and the responsibility and the courage to take them? I pray to God that we shall. And under God, we will.
That was Senate Majority Leader Mike Mansfield, who has addressed a now Chief Justice Earl Warren.
so touched the hearts of all of us as the passing of a president of the United States. There is nothing that adds shock to our sadness more than the assassination of our leader. Chosen as he is to embody the ideals of our people, the faith we have in our institutions, and our belief in the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. Such misfortunes have befallen the nation on other occasions, but never more shockingly than 2 days ago. We are saddened. We are stunned. We are perplexed. John Fitzgerald Kennedy, a great and good president, the friend of all people of goodwill, a believer in the dignity and equality of all human beings, a fighter for justice, an apostle of peace, has been snatched from our midst by the bullet of an assassin. What moved some misguided wretch to do this horrible deed may never be known to us. But we do know that such acts are commonly stimulated by forces of hatred and malevolence, such as today are eating their way into the bloodstream of American life. What a price we pay for this fanaticism. It has been said that the only thing we learn from history is that we do not learn. But surely we can learn if we have the will to do so. Surely there is a lesson to be learned from this tragic event. If we really love this country, if we truly love justice and mercy, if we fervently want to make this nation better for those who are to follow us, we can at least abjure the hatred that consumes people, the false accusations that divide us, and the bitterness that begets violence. Is it too much to hope that the martyrdom of our beloved president might even soften the hearts of those who would themselves recoil from assassination, but who do not shrink from spreading the venom which kindles thoughts of it in others? Our nation is bereaved. The whole world is poorer because of his loss. But we can all be better Americans because John Fitzgerald Kennedy has passed our way. Because he has been our chosen leader at a time in history when his character, his vision, and his quiet courage have enabled him to chart a course for us, a safe course for us, through the shoals of treacherous seas that encompass the world. And now that he is relieved of the almost superhuman burden we imposed on him, may he rest in peace.
That was Chief Justice Earl Warren. The first speaker was Senate Majority Leader Mike Mansfield, and now House Speaker John McCormick.
This is Jacqueline Kennedy and the other bereaved members of our beloved President. Former President Truman, Reverend clergy, and my fellow Americans. As we gather here today, bowed in grief, the heartfelt sympathy of the members of the Congress and of our people are extended to Mrs. Jacqueline Kennedy and to Ambassador and Mrs. Joseph P. Kennedy and their loved ones. Their deep grief is also shared by countless of millions of persons throughout the world. Considered a personal tragedy, as if one had lost a loved member of his own immediate family. Any citizen of our beloved country who looks back over its history cannot fail to see that we have been blessed with God's favor beyond most other peoples. At each great crisis in our history, we have found a leader able to grasp the helm of state and guide the country through the troubles which beset it. In our earliest days, when our strength and wealth were so limited and our problems so great, Washington and Jefferson appeared to lead our people. Two generations later, when our country was torn in two by a fratricidal war, Abraham Lincoln appeared from the mass of the people as a leader able to reunite the nation. In more recent times, in the critical days of the Depression and the Great War forced upon us by fascist aggression, Franklin Delano Roosevelt and later Harry S. Truman appeared on the scene to reorganize the country and lead its revived citizens to victory. Finally, only recently, when the Cold War was building up to the supreme crisis of a threatened nuclear war, capable of destroying everything and everybody that our predecessors had so carefully built and which a free, liberty-loving world wanted, once again, a strong and courageous man appeared ready to lead us. No country need despair so long as God in his infinite goodness continues to provide the nation with leaders able to guide it through the successive crises which seem to be the inevitable fate of any great nation. Surely no country ever faced more gigantic problems than ours in the last few years. And surely no country could have obtained a more able leader in a time of crisis. President John Fitzgerald Kennedy possessed all the qualities of greatness. He had deep faith, complete confidence, human sympathy, and broad vision which recognized the true values of freedom, equality, and brotherhood, which have always been the marks of the American political dream. He had the bravery and the sense of personal duty, which made him willing to face up to the great task of being president in these trying times. He had the warmth and the sense of humor, which made the burden of the task bearable for himself and for his associates, and which made all kinds of diverse peoples and races eager to be associated with him in his task. He had the tenacity and determination to carry each stage of his great work through to its successful conclusion. Now that our great leader has been taken from us in a cruel death, we are bound to feel shattered and helpless in the face of our loss. This is but natural, but as the first bitter pangs of our incredulous grief begins to pass, we must thank God that we were privileged, however briefly, to have had this great man for our president. For he has now taken his place among the great figures of world history. While this is an occasion of deep sorrow, it should be also one of dedication. We must have the determination to unite and carry on the spirit of John Fitzgerald Kennedy for a strengthened America and for a future world of peace.
That was House Speaker John McCormick. The first speaker was Mike Mansfield, the Senate Majority Leader, and then Chief Justice Earl Warren of the Supreme Court, and finally, Mr. John McCormick of Massachusetts, longtime friend of the late President Kennedy. Ann.
Now, President Johnson, slowly and solemnly walks to the bier, preceded by a member of the Honor Guard who is carrying his wreath, his personal wreath, to his former leader. He turns sorrowfully, solemnly, slowly, his head down, and walks away back to his place.
And now, Mrs. Kennedy, holding the hand of daughter Caroline, walks to the casket. She stands, now kneels. Her other child, son John, called John John by his father, became restless here in the rotunda during the speeches, and he left with a member of the family. Now Mrs. Kennedy and Caroline take their place back to the in front of the east entrance of the rotunda. Members of the official family of former President Kennedy are standing behind Mrs. Kennedy and Caroline. Attorney General Robert Kennedy was to her right, facing the casket. And behind them were the other members of the family, the brothers and sisters of the Kennedys, and other members of the official family. And now they are leaving the rotunda. Mrs. Kennedy, the Attorney General, followed by the other members of the family. President Johnson now leaves with his aides. At Mrs. Johnson, the President stops to shake hands with someone just before he left the rotunda. Here in the rotunda itself is silent. The clergy are waiting. They will be the last to leave. The guards still surround the casket as it's draped with the American flag. In front of it now is the wreath that Ann described to you, which says on the card, "The President."
Throughout this very heart-rending occasion, Mrs. Kennedy remained calm and composed. She stared sadly straight ahead at the casket which bears her late husband most of the time, occasionally glancing down to small Caroline at her side. Caroline in a little blue coat, who will only be 6 years old on Wednesday. Also, Mrs. Kennedy occasionally looked very graciously at Speaker McCormick and Senator Mansfield and Chief Justice Warren as they eulogized her late husband. It was while her husband was a member of the House and served here in this Capitol that Mrs. Kennedy met the late president. She was a newspaper woman at the time, and he always enjoyed news people. The members of the cabinet are leaving the rotunda now, slowly, their heads bowed. They had served less than 3 years with President Kennedy, most of them. And now they face a new administration. President Lyndon Johnson has asked them not to resign, but to remain at his side while he makes the great decisions ahead of him. Chief Justice Warren and members of the judiciary also leaving.
And Ann, as the official family and the dignitaries that you describe leave the rotunda, I'm sure the words of Senator Mansfield will long remain when he said there was the sound of laughter and in a moment it was no more. And so she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands. There was a wit in a man neither young nor old, but a wit full of an old man's wisdom and of a child's wisdom, and then in a moment it was no more. And so she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands. There was a man marked with the scars of his love of country, a body active with the surge of a life far, far from spent, and in a moment it was no more. And so she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands. There was a father with a little boy and a little girl, and the joy of each in the other. And in a moment it was no more. And so she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands. So said Senate Majority Leader Mike Mansfield, one of the first of three speakers here in the ceremonies in the rotunda today. Now, as the guards stand by the casket, people are filing from the rotunda. As John F. Kennedy becomes the sixth president of the United States to lie in state here in the rotunda of the Capitol. His coffin is resting on a catafalque first used nearly 99 years ago for President Lincoln, who was the first president to be assassinated. The catafalque was brought yesterday from a tomb beneath the crypt here at the Capitol and placed in the center of the rotunda. It's a simple bier which was fashioned from wood in 1865 for President Lincoln. Since then, it has served as a funeral couch for Presidents Garfield and McKinley, who also were assassinated, and for Presidents Harding and William Howard Taft. The catafalque was most recently used when the unknown soldiers of World War II and the Korean War rested there in May 1958. The dais stands 2 feet above the 11-inch base and is decorated with fringe swags and tassels. Here inside the rotunda, the casket of the president was placed upon the black-draped catafalque. The four sentinels took their positions, two at the head, two at the foot of the bier. The family, the cabinet members, the Supreme Court justices, members of Congress, and the diplomatic corps and other government officials were present as the president's body was placed in state mourning. After the brief ceremonies were concluded, the Capitol is now open to the public. Viewers will form four abreast and proceed up the east front steps to the rotunda. And there, the two single lines will be formed to pass by the flag-covered coffin. The public will leave the Capitol by the west door. Although the hours of viewing are scheduled to end at 9 tonight officially, we have been told that no one in line will be turned away. The Kennedy family has asked that there be no flowers here in the rotunda. Any flowers that have been sent are being placed in the old Supreme Court chamber in the Senate wing. However, there is the official flowers that Ann told you about from President Johnson. Aside from the draped stands for reporters, there is little here to detract from the casket and the catafalque, which is centered now in the rotunda and capped 58 feet above by Ramides and Costagini's frieze. Four guards from the four services will stand as sentinels off the four points of the bier. They will stand guard here the entire time the president's body is in the rotunda. At 11 a.m. tomorrow, the president's body will be transported to St. Matthew's Cathedral, where a pontifical requiem mass will be celebrated at noon. And now, from the Capitol rotunda, speaking for Ann Coric, this is Art Schreiber.
And this is Jim Snyder. During the ceremony in the rotunda, a light rain fell in Washington so that the streets are now wet. And Mrs. Kennedy emerged from the Capitol building, chatted very briefly with Mrs. Lyndon Johnson, then shook hands with President Johnson, and with her two children, got into her limousine, and they have now proceeded back down the route they came, traveling at a much more rapid rate than they traveled when they traveled to the Capitol, and Mrs. Kennedy is now about to return to the White House. While this procession was going on, and before it, and during the eulogies that you heard by Senator Mike Mansfield, Chief Justice Earl Warren, and House Speaker John McCormick, in places all over the world, thousands, millions of people have also joined in the tribute to President Kennedy. In Europe today, churches were jammed as clergymen of all faiths praised and prayed for President Kennedy. On Tuesday, a special requiem mass will be held in St. Peter's Church in Belgrade, Yugoslavia. In Germany, Roman Catholic priests and Protestant ministers asked parishioners to pray for the soul of Mr. Kennedy. And at U.S. military chapels in West Germany, special prayers were offered for the late president at all Sunday services. In Spain, the nation is in official mourning, and the newspapers there are still publishing special editions on the circumstances of the assassination. In Dungannstown, County Wexford, Ireland, a place Mr. Kennedy visited this summer, there was a requiem mass said in the 137-year-old church where Mr. Kennedy's great-grandfather Patrick was baptized. And the parish priest gave a brief sermon and said, "Never again will we see Jack Kennedy's smiling face, hear his voice, or shake his hand. Almighty God has called him to himself." In Germany, Chancellor Ludwig Erhard called an extraordinary cabinet meeting to honor Mr. Kennedy. In Singapore, more than 1,000 people, including members of the diplomatic corps, packed a Methodist church to attend a memorial service for Mr. Kennedy. In Vatican City, Pope Paul VI told 30,000 people who gathered in St. Peter's Square that the assassination of Mr. Kennedy reveals, quote, how great a capacity for hate and evil there is still in the world, and how great a threat to civil order and peace. In Warsaw, Nobel Prize-winning author John Steinbeck was meeting with a group of journalists, and he talked to them of Mr. Kennedy and said he spearheaded all the liberal passions during his time in the White House. "I dare to say," Steinbeck said, "there was no citizen he did not care about." At this point, perhaps it's inappropriate, but we have received the news that Lee Harvey Oswald, the man suspected of shooting Mr. Kennedy on Friday, died this afternoon in the same hospital in Dallas where Mr. Kennedy passed away at 1 o'clock Friday afternoon. Mr. Oswald was shot by a nightclub owner in Dallas, Jack Ruby, who rushed into the basement of the city hall and fired point blank at Oswald as the police were transferring Oswald from the city jail to the county jail in Dallas. Perhaps there is some justice, perhaps not, in the fact that at the time when the nation was paying tribute to Mr. Kennedy in this very solemn and sad ceremony involving the transfer of his casket from the White House to the Capitol, that this event took place in Dallas, and Mr. Oswald expired. We've been bringing you a special broadcast of the procession bearing the body of John F. Kennedy from the White House to the rotunda of the Capitol. Your reporters have been Sid Davis, Frank George, Dave Parker, Art Schreiber, and Ann Corrick. Our production supervisor was Charles Braylor. This is Jim Snyder in Washington.